What are you going to do with your life? It's the question often posed, fairly or not. It aggravates them, to teenagers as they ready themselves to leave school to venture into a world of work. It could also be posed to researchers at universities and laboratories around the country. What will you do with your research? How will you translate that into a viable business? Unfortunately, the answer is often take it overseas. That next step from research to production is often missing in Australia. It can be like a valley of death, one of my guests says, yet other countries seem to be able to do it, so why can't we? A new lucrative funding model established by the Victorian government, the Breakthrough Fund, is about to seek change. The former Victorian Premier John Brumby, who's the Chancellor of La Trobe University, is heading up the fund, and he joins us, along with Thomas Mushmeyer, the Professor of Chemistry at the University of Sydney and the winner of the Prime Minister's Prize for Innovation last year, but who knows all about the difficulty of what's officially called translation of research into application. Welcome to you both.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Before we talk about this new fund and how it compares with what else is on offer about the country, why do we struggle in Australia to do this? I'd just love to hear both of your top-of-mind thoughts to do this translation. John Brumby.
Well, there's a whole raft of reasons, but essentially you've got the simple answer is market failure in this space. You've got wonderfully successful researchers across our university sector. You see that across Australia. You see it in Melbourne, Monash, La Trobe University. But getting that, turning a good idea into a good product or a good business, there's a lot of risk involved and there's a lot of failure at the early stage. And Australia has traditionally been good at research and bad at that translation. There's very few private investors in that space. And one of the compelling reasons for this $2 billion breakthrough fund over 10 years is really to push into that space to help turn those good ideas into those good businesses. That's my sort of
okay.
half a minute.
Yep. Thomas, you?
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Also, the universities in New South Wales, Sydney, etc., are doing this, and we have this issue around de-risking, the need for de-risking the investment. There is a fair amount of early-stage investment available by enlightened high-net-worth investors, etc., but it really would help to have some co-funding to de-risk and enable us to take the first few steps towards, you know, on the long road towards introducing a new commercially successful product or process.
So when you both say de-risk, you really mean someone else shares, puts in some money as well, and that's taxpayers' money we're talking about, isn't it? Are both of you saying that? Thomas, to you first.
Yes, of course, it's a matter of it's a matter of matching something. So if the risk is very, very high early stage, there may be a view of there being some additional due diligence associated with a government fund. So it's not just money, it is also expertise that comes with it. So the investor will be more comfortable to enter that journey. So it's not just money, it is also curated money, if you will.
Oh, interesting. And John, you know, you're comfortable with that as an ex-premier?
No, I agree with that, absolutely. And Thomas put it beautifully. It's a risk issue. So, Geraldine, if you look in medical research, look in therapeutics, the drugs, to get something to market, it's billions of dollars, it's 10 to 12 years. So at that very early stage, potentially for every 100 projects you're looking at that researchers have worked on, that ideas that might work, possibly one will get through to the end. And so you're really in the failure business. And as Thomas said, you've got to de-risk it so that you can get funds and investors into there. And secondly, you've got to build the team of people with the skills, the experience, the skills, the know-how to push the invention along that continuum. And by the way, Victoria's also done that with a company called BioCurate, which is funded by the Victorian government, Melbourne University, Monash University, $60 million, solely focused on the therapeutic sector. So solely focused on drugs that'll benefit people. And we're in that very early stage again, and it's a mix of funding, but particularly expertise and skills.
I think you think also, Thomas, it's cultural, that we actually have now crossed the line, and we've talked about this several times this year on Saturday Extra, to put money into research. But it's the translation that we're now really, we balk at the barrier. So, and that in fact, we're inclined now to the status quo, which actually includes research, but not translation.
Well, one of the issues that holds translation back is, of course, regulation, and regulation always follows innovation by definition. But that regulation can just stop, for example, building new plants because one needs to have a reference plant that has already worked for 2 years at a certain size, etc. And if it's a new kind of activity, that by definition can't exist. So that's one of the reasons why a lot of the more heavy industry kind of things, steel in the ground, go overseas first to showcase Australian technology there and then comes back. I'm all for regulation. Regulation is great, needs to protect society and people, but there needs to be some more flexibility around what's called sandpit, the sandpit concept, that I have a certain amount of regulation that is different for a small area where I can do new things whilst protecting the rest of the country with the existing regulation. And that new regulation should be then tighter. So it's a tighter regulation, but more flexible.
So just tell us about this. I've not heard that term before, this sandpit notion.
Oh, so you have one lot of legislation covering the whole country, and then you basically physically exclude certain zones from that regulation and have different regulation apply there. And the concept is called sandpit because you can play in that space. In Germany, for example, it's industrial parks which are exempt and have got these different kinds of regulations, which are much tougher, much more reporting has to go on, much more data collection. So it's much tougher, but it is more flexible. It allows one to do new things. One doesn't have to prove that it already works because it's new.
Right. So this is more than a startup hub you're talking about.
Oh, yes. These are physical. This is a physical concept. So a 10 by 10 kilometer, spot in the country somewhere, or 10 by 20. And the energy region in Dubbo, in New South Wales, they have done that. They have changed some of the rules to get processes approved for renewable energy. And that is working very well.
In fact, I just want to stay with you for a moment because you were telling our producer, Kate, that this point of culture and the attitude that starts to bring in these different views, for instance, is interesting. In Germany, you think there's still the impetus, believe it or not, of the Marshall Plan, the post-World War II Marshall Plan, the US-funded recovery plan for Europe after World War II, that it was based on innovation after such appalling destruction, and that in a sense it has a long tail effect.
Yes, so there's a bank that is called for capital investment, which was initially funded by the Marshall Plan, and that is so successful that they kept it going. And what it is, if I were to build a factory in Germany, I would get 30 million euros or so as an interest-free loan for 10 years. I would get the land leasehold for about 5 to 10 years at lease free, these sorts of things to really help. So research translation, doing big things, is really not just about getting a co-funding of a little bit. It's about visionary co-investment at a large scale. And other countries do that too. I mean, China, Japan,
Israel, obviously.
It's not Israel. It's not just in Germany.
Does this ring true with you, John Brumby?
Yeah, Geraldine, absolutely. And one of the things with our fund, in the past, we've been traditionally grant oriented, and governments do that, I guess, because it's safe and it's clear. We give you this and you do this. It's a clear relationship. Satisfies most of the probity tests for Parliament and so on. But our fund is going to be much, much broader. And to go to Thomas's point, we'll be looking at all sorts of co-investment. We'll be looking at loans. We'll be looking at grants. We'll be looking, as I said, at co-investment. We'll be looking at equity arrangements, moving Victoria much more into that space, which is typical internationally. And I think one of the things perhaps I should have mentioned earlier, that the reason Premier Daniel Andrews was so keen on establishing this fund is we've just completed some work on what the Victorian government did in the 2000s. I was the minister then. But for the $470 million that was invested over 7 years there, the recent independent research has showed that had a multiplier effect of between 3 and 4 across the whole state economy. So again, to go to Thomas's point, what's happening in places like Germany, we need to replicate that. And we're going to do that across those five sectors, health and life sciences, agri-food, advanced manufacturing, clean economy and digital technologies, and get that sort of multiplier effect which can create so many jobs and export opportunities for Australia.
Now, interestingly, you said this is often an exercise in failure at some point. And are you going to prepare the population of Victoria for that?
Yeah. And look, I think we need a mature discussion about that across Australia. Anything that you invest in at a very, very early stage, it's higher risk. As we've been talking about this morning, and that's why there's market failure. So, but we're confident that across a mix of investments at very early stage, plus some highly prospective, more advanced prospects, we're very confident from our experience in the 2000s and all the modelling that we've done that we will see significant, very significant long-term benefits. And one other comment I'd make, we're talking about co-investment. Thomas mentioned that. We've got $200 million a year. We'll be looking at co-investments with universities, with the federal government, of course, with venture capitalists, with philanthropy, with superannuation funds, and with research institutes. And we think we can turn that $200 million a year into more like $500, $600 million or even more. So this is going to be a major source of stimulus short-term, but also particularly long-term growth in the Victorian and national economy.
So we've just got an interesting text from Jennifer from Canberra. The Queensland company that developed the rapid home COVID test is an example of your discussion. Funded by US dollars, she believes. Expanded in manufacture supported by US dollars. No product available in Australia. I believe the Australian government wouldn't help. Well, look, we don't know that. But Thomas, that's a somewhat depressing story.
Yes, well, I've read about this in the media and can't comment, obviously, on the veracity of it. But it is something that that highlights, I guess, the view of risk. Australia often is it's a country where risk is not celebrated in that sense, because risk comes with failure, and I think we just need to celebrate people who are ready to take the risk, and when they fall down, not to be too critical. And in other countries, like in Israel, that is part of the national psyche. And there are papers, there's a weekly startup page in one of their main newspapers, etc., where these stories are told.
That's very interesting. Yes, that would be a cultural shift, I must say. You yourself have been through this, haven't you, Thomas? You've had to go overseas to have things developed.
Yes, so we started development here, but we're now rolling out one of our technologies, the CAT-HDR process, to take waste plastics to oil. We're rolling that out overseas in the UK. The construction of the first plant for 80,000 tons has just been announced 2 days ago, and that is a really global situation with partners from the US, from the UK, obviously from Australia.
Well, there are partners in Australia, are there?
Well, that's us. We've developed the technology.
You're the capital.
And we are pushing, and we are commercializing that in the UK. But we're also having a version of this technology being commercialized now in Australia, slowly. But it will be that the first plant, it looks like it's going to go into the UK, and then maybe the second or third plant will start in Australia.
And see, you're doing all this work on battery technology, and I ask that because don't you think that has got the opportunity to sort of capture imagination? It's sort of semi-understandable anyway.
Yes.
And that might help.
Yes, so that is a little bit of a tricky story, because obviously we've been in contact with various funding agencies around this arena, and CFC, the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, and really there was not much appetite to help with the manufacturing. So we are basically told that manufacturing, well, we don't really do that kind of thing here. If you have systems of batteries that you want to install and showcase, that's fine. We can think about helping that, you know, changing the electricity supply, making it greener and so forth. But to make new batteries in Australia, oh, that's not going to happen.
Oh, dear.
So we were not encouraged. So we found currently partners in India to help us with that further, yeah.
Oh.
Gerald.
Go on, John.
Geraldine, I was just going to say one thing on that, and I don't know if the New South Wales government has done something similar, but one of the other things the Victorian government has done is they created this thing called the Victorian Business Growth Fund. So they put $50 million in. It's borrowed money, but, you know, at the moment, of course, you can borrow money very cheaply. And now what's happened is a number of the superannuation funds have also invested in that. So a $50 million fund has become a $400 million fund. And it's focusing precisely, Thomas, in the sort of area that you're challenged in at the moment, which is that manufacturing space. So they're prepared to look at, you know, longer-term returns. They're not really interested in the early-stage translation. It's more on that manufacturing side. Mm. So I think, Geraldine, we are seeing more funds flow into this sort of area, what we're talking about today, the early stage. And really the trick is get the culture right, because it is true in the United States, Israel, they have a different culture, Germany. Get the culture right, get the skills right.
Others will flow. We've got to go. I'm just looking at the clock, unfortunately, John. John Brumby, with a big job ahead of him. And Thomas Maschmeyer, congratulations to you, for a co-founder of Gelion Technology.